Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle, coming up on the programme this week.
The four walls isn't great when you're kind of already in quite a stressful situation as it is, to then be stuck in the four walls. I don't really know how I did it.
My set task is to swallow his medication weekly. I'm also have help giving him his methotrexate injections, help cool him down after leukemia, saturation, sweats, and help keep him safe during his seizures and giving first aid and recovery if needed.
We do know there are actually many young carers that are unidentified and not accessing that support. And actually at this time as well, we are concerned and thinking about there could be an increase in the number of young carers as well, directly because of the impacts of the pandemic.
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organisations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
Tackling the stigma.
Hi everyone, Mick Coyle here. I do hope you're well. Thank you for checking out Mental Health Monday. I've had some really positive reaction to the show in recent weeks. I'm going to be asking you if you can help me out with that a little bit as well, because word of mouth is absolutely crucial to the success of podcasts like this one. And I'll be asking you if you can get involved a little bit later on. Right, in the last month or so, I've been talking a lot about the issue of young carers. This is in my day job away from Mental Health Monday, but there's very much a mental health link to a lot of the conversations that I've been having. So young carers, young person who looks after a loved one, often within their own home, and does so maybe even without even knowing they're a young carer. It can take up hours of their day, minutes of their day, but it can always be very much playing on their mind. It can get in their way of their schoolwork, get in the way of their socializing space as well. 2 out of 5 said their mental health is worse now than it was than before the pandemic got underway. 2 out of 3 young carers are more stressed now than when the pandemic began. And 58% of young carers' workloads increased by 10 hours a week during lockdown one. We're going to be hearing from different voices on this over the course of this week's podcast. First up, we'll be hearing from a couple of young carers themselves. Then we'll be hearing from the national lead from the Children's Society for Young Carers, Helen Ledbetter, who will contextualize some of these conversations. Hey, before I go on, it would be really, really helpful if you're listening to this, Mental Health Monday, you can do us a favor and just pop on your social media and click on a link if you can to the podcast, or click share from the podcast itself, pop it onto your social media and tell everybody that you're listening to Mental Health Monday. Hashtag Mental Health Monday always does really well on a Monday, and millions of different people have started picking up on it as well. But we want to make sure that the podcast really shines through as well. So if you'd be kind enough to share that you've been listening to the podcast this week, that'd be really helpful. I don't get paid extra for more listeners or anything like that, but I do think that if people do hear it and know that other people are listening as well, it just adds to that normalization of the conversation. So if you're able to do that, that'd be wonderful for me. Hashtag Mental Health Monday. We're going to hear from Tasha, who's 14. First up though, Amy, who was 17 when lockdown one struck. And Amy sets out absolutely brilliantly the roles and the expectations that she faces as a young carer and some of the issues that come with it. She started by telling me about the situation she faces at home.
So for me, I am a young carer for a parent with mental health issues. So it's kind of a lot different to what stereotypically people see as a carer, because I obviously deal with a lot more the emotional side and kind of ensuring that my mum is supported if she goes out or if any kind of trigger event occurs, that I'm there to support her emotionally. However, then because of obviously all of that and kind of the impacts of medication on mental health, I then obviously have to help out with kind of financial stuff and any sort of paperwork side of thing. So a lot of the time I've kind of grown up doing like universal credit paperwork, the personal into payments paperwork. I kind of grew up doing that. So kind of for someone my age, I do know how to do quite a bit of paperwork, which is a bit unusual.
Can I ask you then, as you enter sort of adulthood now, even though you've had those sort of adult experiences there, at what age now, with the knowledge that you gathered, do you now think, actually, I've been a carer since I was how old, do you think?
So when we backdate kind of significant events and stuff like that, we kind of think it was around 8. So it would be like 10 years now, basically.
Which is a really, really long time. And presumably, you know, the main part of your life that you very much remember. We've, of course, just had this period of lockdown, which was different for so many people for so many different reasons as well. What was lockdown like for you?
Interesting. Just that that's what I always say. It was an interesting few months, to say the least. Unfortunately, my mum did lose her job. which was a bit of a setback for her. So I did have to kind of take on a lot of the more financial burden of the kind of household, because obviously it's just me and my mom in the family. So it was kind of, I took responsibility for the finances. So I kind of tried to get employment very quickly, and I tried to find, like, you know, those 30-day contracts, despite the fact at the time I was 17, I was trying to just constantly try and find work or find a job, which kind of wasn't very normal. And then obviously I was doing a lot more housework and kind of very isolated as well, because a lot of my kind of friends are the complete opposite side of the county because of where I go to sixth form. It's kind of, for me, I wasn't really seeing anyone. Obviously no one could see anyone, but I wasn't seeing anyone, and therefore I was in a confined space for such a long time, and kind of the four walls isn't great when you're kind of already in quite a stressful situation as it is. To then be stuck in the four walls, it was, I don't really know how I did it.
Did you previously find that sort of education, school and college, did you find that that was a break for you? Not necessarily respite, because of course it's difficult and your studies can be difficult as well. But it was that part of the routine that worked for you before lockdown?
Oh, 100%. Like, I always, even now, I always say, and I've said for years, school is always that place away from home where you can kind of, especially for any sort of young carer, is that place away from home where you can act your age. Because at school, you're around those all your age, and it means you can kind of immerse yourself properly into being a teenager, whereas at home, you just can't do that. So yeah, school definitely is just a place to be a teenager.
When people talk about their mental health now, I think probably your generation talk about it much more positively than I think mine and other generations have before it as well. Have you managed to get your head around those sorts of feelings and emotions that you had during that lockdown period? What was going on, do you think, inside your own mind during that time?
I mean, I was definitely kind of, I think for every, I can say for myself, I think it was everyone was kind of the fear of not knowing. And I think especially being a student as well, there's so much kind of apprehension and kind of, we don't know what's going to happen. And we still don't know what's going to happen for, especially for my year. Like, you're constantly thinking, well, if I put the work in, will it pay off? Or if I don't do this, will it pay off? And then it's kind of a, well, if I don't need to worry about that, then why, I should just worry about sorting everything else at home. So that was kind of a big thing that played on my mind during lockdown, as well as kind of the future. Like, for me, I finish education next year. After that is I take a big step into the adult world. And then the isolation and kind of the loneliness really did kind of affect me quite a lot, because I don't really know, it just, it affected me a lot. And I was doing a lot of Zooms and finding Zoom quizzes and, you know, all those sorts of things. And that was kind of, that was my only way I was seeing people, because I couldn't do much. And it just, I don't really know how to put it into words, because I just remember feeling so lonely and just no one really understood what was going on.
Well, I think, you know, everybody was kind of dealing with their own sort of stuff at the time, weren't they? I think everyone was trying to view the world from a slightly different point of view themselves. But I guess from your point of view, and people like you, young carers like you, you were dealing with that too. Plus you were still dealing with the other issues. And then maybe you also then didn't get those outlets that you previously would have got. So that sort of, I guess, makes it doubly difficult as well. Did you feel at the time like there were people you could reach out to sort of explain how you were feeling, or maybe to get a sense of, see if there was some empathy out there from some people?
So my project support worker, she, bless her, she was inundated, because obviously there's so many young carers obviously out there, and she obviously has to deal with a lot of young carers as part of her role. So it was kind of, she was inundated with calls from people like me and others. So I would call her like maybe once a week just to kind of have a little bit of a rant, and kind of, because she herself was an ex-young carer, so she kind of, words of wisdom and kind of ways to kind of cope, that is her thing. So I called her once a week, and then I was also getting calls from my school and kind of other people who kind of are mentors to me, just to kind of check that I was okay, and if I needed anything, if they could sort anything out for me as well.
Was that helpful to have that level of support and that interest from people that you knew?
Yeah, because it definitely made me feel like people weren't forgetting about me, because I think a common thing with young carers is that we're always forgotten and we're always left till last. And to kind of not be forgotten, it meant a lot to me.
Where does it come from, that idea that young carers are forgotten or not thought about, not considered? You know, you only need to look at legislation the government brought in during the middle of the pandemic that goes to show that, you know, it can have impacts that they maybe weren't anticipating. Where does that come from, do you think?
I think it's the same thing with kind of carers in society as general. They're always seen as like the hidden, I'm going to use my inverted commas, like health service, because you never will see them. Carers are invisible, but they save so much and they save so much resources. So I think kind of the whole bracket of the term carers, and then adding young people and carers together, to a lot of people, it doesn't make sense. And a lot of people would never believe that those two things go together and that young people should be like, young people are carers. A lot of people don't believe it's a thing. So kind of, I think when you've got so much stigma around it, people just forget about it. And a lot of us young carers don't really get known until it's kind of an issue where the authorities do have to get involved.
If someone said to you, what do you think you'll remember 2024, or how will you sum it up? What are the sort of things that'll spring to mind, do you think?
I think it's going to be like the kind of the experiences, like in terms of things that we've done despite everything going on, because I know there's so many like crazy things that you can do over the internet now that many people didn't know you could do before. So it's kind of, I think I'll remember it for like doing some like Zoom parties and some Zoom like celebrations and random things that you can do over Zoom. So I'll definitely be remembering that. And I think the other thing will be like this coming together. I think I see it a lot that so many people have come more together, especially now in sixth form. Everyone's so much closer than what we was this time last year.
What will be beneficial to you now? What sort of support will be helpful to you as we come out of this lockdown period, but potentially sort of trip back into it at the same time?
I mean, I definitely think there should be more in place to kind of protect young carers, because I think, especially over the lockdown, a lot more young carers became young carers, if that makes sense. Because a lot of people would never kind of been in the situation where they'd had to be at home with a family member, or family members had illnesses or had COVID, and a lot of people never had that before. And I think as we come out, I think especially we need to have more emphasis on supporting young carers and kind of a whole approach to it, so that education is kind of, it isn't a kind of a way of stopping progress, because a lot of the time young carers aren't that academic and aren't good kind of in their studies because their time is caring and caring responsibilities. But instead, kind of education should kind of help them and kind of be that step between kind of like adult life and being a carer, and it should kind of help them in general. And then I think there should be kind of, I'd love to say more funding for carers projects, but I don't see that happening, unfortunately. But I think there needs to be kind of more people and services out there to help young carers, especially if we do go into another lockdown. There's going to be so much kind of isolation again, and so many young people who deserve to get support, but there's just nothing for them. So I think a bit of money for carers would be, for some young carer services would be nice.
One of the things that's really surprised me, just looking at the matter in the short time that I have, is the lack of almost data around young carers. The fact that there will be people in schools and colleges today, universities, who are young carers, but they're not on a register, they're not on a list, they're not in a database, the local authority doesn't know about it, potentially even the school doesn't know about it. One of the ideas that we've suggested is that maybe inclusion in a school census will be beneficial, so that primary schools could pass information on to secondary schools. Local authorities would then know which children potentially needed support, but also teachers would also get a handle of, you know, if a child was late for class or their mobile phone kept ringing in the middle of class, that the teacher would understand why that was going on, instead of a child having to deal with that themselves and then all the hassle that comes with getting into trouble from a teacher. What do you make of that? That schools can play a slightly bigger part in helping get that help to the people who need it.
I 100% like relate to some of the things you just mentioned. I was the first young carer to be identified in my secondary school, and kind of I was okay with it because I kind of wanted to like make a bigger profile for it in the school, but kind of I knew of loads of kind of emails that were being sent out and things that were being said amongst teachers to kind of ensure that they knew about my situation and kind of knew about me. But then it was kind of, I don't think it was done in the correct way, however, but that's a different story. But I think that whole thing where kind of schools are made aware, teachers are made aware, it then, especially for the young person themselves, it's less humiliating when it does become like an issue with homework or being late, or I know if you do end up in a detention, not being able to obviously be there. I think kind of that does become embarrassing because you have to pull the teacher aside and be like, look, this is the situation. I can't do this. It's not my fault. And then I think for me, especially, I found when I kind of opened up to teachers about it, they kind of all looked at me and was like, I don't really know much about this. I can't help you. You're going to have to like teach me how to help you, which kind of is the complete opposite reverse of what a teacher should be there to. But I think now in sixth form, where my sixth form is a lot more kind of aware of young carers and young carer aware, I think they're so much more kind of accepting of the fact, you know, I don't meet all my deadlines. I can't sometimes be in school for other reasons. And, you know, my teachers are aware and other members of staff that might be with me at times in the day are aware. But other than that, no, the whole school doesn't know, which, you know, is perfect for me because I don't need everyone to know. And I think it'd be nice. I've heard so many like horror stories from where people have been called out like in front of their whole year groups for certain things. And it is embarrassing. And I think if you can take it down the approach of, if schools can take it down the approach even, where they're just using the teachers that are associated with the student, it will be so much more helpful and so much more beneficial, and those staff can give targeted support rather than just general kind of advice.
What about that from Amy, who was 17 when the lockdown got underway? Can I tell you now about Tasha, who is 14, just 14, and dealing with all of these issues as we're about to hear. And within this conversation, you will hear the sort of pressures that are on these young people. And don't they carry it so very well, you know, and what incredible skills that they'll be developing for later life, as long as the work that they're doing now doesn't negatively impact on them. We heard right at the start of the programme about the mental health impact of lockdown on young carers. But remember, throughout all of this, these young carers had roles, responsibilities, things to deal with way before coronavirus struck. Tasha's going to tell us first what she deals with at home.
So sadly, my father has an acquired brain injury, epilepsy, PTSD, a bulging spinal disc and leukemia, which has then brought on rheumatoid arthritis in over 50 of his joints. So there's quite a lot to do to help. My set task is to swallow his medication weekly. I'm also have helped giving him his methotrexate injections, help cool him down after leukemia, saturation sweats, and help keep him safe during his seizures and giving first aid and recovery if needed. When his arthritis is like really flaring up, I help with the basic care needs of moving, feeding, dressing and washing him. I obviously help my mum with like any household chores she needs doing if she's having to tend to him as well.
And in terms of being able to sort of fit that in with school work, school life, are you able to find a balance? Do you just kind of find it, well, it's day to day, we'll see what comes the next day?
Yeah, so keeping on top of my work is like really important for me. But I do have the time to balance things, especially at the weekends. In the mornings, I get most of my work done. But obviously, my grades and that are really important to me because I aspire to be a vet. So it's really important for me to still focus on my schoolwork as well.
Just tell us about lockdown. What was it like for you, and what were those feelings you were going through as it all happened and schools closed and life changed for a lot of people, didn't it?
So it was a really worrying time for us all. My father's immune system is not very good at all, and so he'd struggle to fight COVID-19 if he was to catch it. He is considered extremely clinically vulnerable due to his leukemia and the medication he has to take for his arthritis. So the whole house, my mum, my sister, my father and myself, went into proper shielding isolation for the whole of lockdown. Apart from a daily walk, we did not leave the house at all. But I would do anything to protect my father, so it wasn't difficult to choose this.
No, absolutely. And I think that, you know, that's a real credit to you and a show of strength of both you and I think the family, that you were willing to make those sacrifices as well. When you're not going into school, though, and you've not got those sort of regular interactions with your friends, what sort of impact do you think that had on you?
I do miss I'd miss that interaction with them, with the school, with my teachers. But at the same time, I know that I was protecting him. And it was kind of that balance. I could always contact my friends kind of virtually. So it wasn't a hard decision to obviously to shield. And I could still have that contact with them, but then stay at home.
So have you found that those sort of local connections, those local organisations have been really sort of beneficial to you to keep those connections going?
Yeah, so like both at school and with the young carers, they're kind of like my lifeline. So I could spend time with other young carers and I'd always enjoy it because it's so much easier being around people that understand the same situation as me. And there's no judgment from anyone and you just make the most of everything together.
It must be quite odd sometimes speaking to, you know, young carers, other people under the age of, you know, 15, 16, and you all know, you know, what you're doing. You understand what it is to be a young carer, but you must deal with loads of adults in your sort of life who wouldn't have a clue about what a young carer is or does. That's quite a strange thing. Normally it's the adults who know what they're doing, don't they?
Yeah. When speaking to adults, it's still quite hard because I've had to obviously mature to help my father. But obviously even with adults, it's still hard for them to understand because even maybe at my age, they weren't doing these things. So really, if it's anyone that's going through the same situation as a carer, it's easier for them to understand. Whereas if it's someone who doesn't do any caring duties at all, it's really hard for them to completely understand the situation and put themselves in that position.
One of the things that we're looking at when we talk to a lot of young carers is we're looking at the idea that there are a lot of young carers who maybe aren't getting that support, that the local authorities, the charity organisations you mentioned, don't know about them and therefore can't offer them their help. I guess they'd find themselves in a really difficult situation because they don't have those opportunities to reach out in the way that you've been able to.
Yeah, I think that's why I like doing these interviews and things with the young carers, because it just spreads the awareness and it makes me feel better because I could be helping other young carers in a similar situation to me.
Tasha, 14 years of age. Before that, Amy, who was 17 when lockdown got underway. I think she may have turned 18 by now, but both of them absolute heroes, giving us their sense of what things have been like for them during lockdown. And more conversations around this to come. Helen Ledbetter is the national lead for the Children's Society. Now, she very much deals with young carers on a day-to-day basis, so she knows all about the issues that go with being a young carer, both before the lockdown, during the lockdown, and the issues that will come in the future as well. There's also a campaigning element to this conversation as well, with a lack of data on young carers preventing organisations like the Children's Society from being able to help many who may require it. So I had the conversation with Helen and we spoke just as lockdown number two was getting underway, and it was a case of here we go again.
That's right, yeah. And we know from the first lockdown there were many challenges that young carers had to face in terms of caring in isolation for their loved ones, for people in their family, in all different circumstances, but with reduced support from outside of the home, and the impacts upon young carers themselves we know were quite really significant in terms of impacts upon their own mental health, making sure that they were trying to continue with their own education and look after themselves, but also the worry about caring for someone and during the pandemic and the impacts of that. And now as we go into second lockdown, within the winter months as well, there is concern again about those kind of increased impacts and how young carers are managing and still isolated and still shielding with people in their families.
Obviously, so much of the work you do through the Children's Society is about helping and supporting those young people, helping them, supporting them, you know, in a pre-COVID world, I imagine, its difficulties and had its challenges. Are you fully prepared, do you think, for what's to come? Or will there be lots of unanswered questions for quite some time about the long-term impacts, if you like, of the pandemic?
We've been talking to young carers and young carer support services throughout the pandemic. And at the Children's Society, our aim is to inform advice and guidelines around support for young carers and their families, but really with their kind of views embedded within that. So we make sure that we talk to the young carers so they can tell us what they need for themselves or their families so that we can then advocate on their behalf and really make sure that people in a position to make decisions on their behalf or to think about what they need, the needs of these young people, are informed by actually how life is impacting and what the priorities for those young carers are. So throughout the pandemic, yes, we've been engaging with young carers, listening to how they're facing challenges, supporting their family and what they need. We will, of course, continue to do that. But really, as things are changing continuously in terms of is there another lockdown or regional kind of tiered lockdowns as well, how that also impacts upon young people, there is a need to continue to be monitoring how things change and how it's impacting upon those young people and thinking about the future to make sure that there aren't these kind of long-term negative impacts upon young people, that we can ensure that they are still able to engage in things like school and have their own kind of needs met so that there isn't a long-term impact for them. But that's something that we'll need to continue to monitor and talk to young carers themselves about, I think, at this stage.
Absolutely. And in terms of those conversations, you obviously build up a real degree of trust with those young carers who know you, your partner organisations right across the country, and share their stories, their fears and their concerns as well. You must also be concerned of the young carers who don't have those connections within community, who haven't yet been able to make a connection with an organisation like your own.
Yes, that's right. We actually network and talk to young carer services that exist all over the country that can reach out and support young carers directly in the community or where they live. But we do know from our work kind of pre-COVID and from now that there are actually many young carers that are unidentified and not accessing that support for different reasons. And actually at this time as well, we are concerned and thinking about there could be an increase in the number of young carers as well, but directly because of the impacts of the pandemic, or where those young people, they may have had caring responsibilities that have increased in their kind of nature and the impact upon their own selves. So yes, there are many thousands of young carers out there, we think, that aren't recognised or accessing any support that they are entitled to.
It seems strange in 2020, we're still at a point where we don't have official figures of young carers. That must be incredibly frustrating for people like yourself who want to help as many people as possible.
That's right. We don't really have a grasp, I don't think, on the correct number of young carers that are out there. There are a number of estimates and different figures. So the last national census in 2011 outlined, I think, 166,000 young carers approximately across England. But we really think this is the tip of the iceberg, because it's very reliant on people completing those forms and highlighting that there is a young carer in the family, if they even know that or recognise that themselves. But it really puts an onus on families to be kind of completing those forms so we can get those figures. But there are other estimates out there from BBC and academic bodies around that highlight 800,000 young carers as being the larger estimate, which we think is probably closer to the correct number, but there isn't a definitive statistic out there, so we don't really know how many young carers are out there.
Or indeed where they are, so local authorities potentially can't either budget for them or take action to go and support them. You've come up with the idea that potentially you could include a child's young carer status in a school census. That would mean that information would be passed from primary through school through to secondary school, college, and then potentially even university, so that all throughout that education period, schools would know, they would understand what that child was going through, but also local authorities could also see the children that might require additional support now or in the future?
Yes, exactly. I think there's a number of ways that we could be gathering that data, and ourselves at the Children's Society and our partners at Carers Trust have been kind of advocating for this for a number of years, even pre-COVID, so it'd be good to see that we can get something in place. But yes, those methods of within the school census, it doesn't currently include the young carer as a grouping, as a cohort that the data is gathered from of young people attending school. So we think it would be important to get young carers included within the census, because that can also enable those schools to be aware of those pupils in their school who are young carers and may need additional support. And additionally, we think that within local authorities, there should be improved monitoring of young carers and their families, which currently isn't in place. So, but young carers have rights for the local authority to carry out an assessment of their needs, for example, and also an assessment of the person that they care for, so be it a parent or a sibling, whoever it is. But at the moment, those kind of identification and assessment data isn't being gathered. So also there's accountability, really, that support should be provided for families, but without that kind of data gathering and evidence, there's no way of knowing whether those responsibilities and rights are all being carried out. So yeah, through the school census and also through improved monitoring through the local authority, we think would be a much better way of gathering that data of how many young carers there are and where they are.
You mentioned the official census, 166,000, other predictions, 800,000, I've heard. If you mentioned that across the UK, potentially a million. Is the sort of the system ready, or organisations like yours ready, if you suddenly have potentially 750,000 other young people to support? That would be, I mean, they're out there now, in many cases requiring support, but that would be a big undertaking for organisations, your partner organisations, to put things in place for.
That's right. With young carers, though, really, and their families, you've got to think that it's a family as opposed to kind of a unique. Young carers don't care in isolation. They care because somebody in their family has needs for support. And so really, in order to be able to prevent or reduce negative impacts upon that young person, it requires a whole council, we call it whole systems approach. So actually that requires different agencies to work together to be supporting the family rather than the onus all being upon one agency. So it could be a school can provide support, it can be that children's services, adult services can be thinking about what support needs and how they need to work together for that family. And as I say, there's a network, we know of up to nearly 300 young carers services working across England who actually have restrictions around their funding and restrictions around the numbers of young people that they can work with, but they really are kind of proactively engaging with young carers and great support networks for those young people and for their families as well. So yes, of course, there's concern about suddenly increasing the numbers of identified young carers, but actually if all of those agencies are working together sufficiently and well, then really there should be kind of it should prevent young carers from falling through the gap in support, enabling their family to get the help that they need.
In terms of inclusion within a school census and gathering that data, it wouldn't necessarily be a complex thing to do or an expensive thing to do. What would you say, given your personal experience dealing with young carers, what would you say to politicians who have the power to do this, to make something like this happen that makes young carers' lives potentially easier for the future and allow organisations like yours to support them?
Well, the school census would be an ideal place to be gathering that data. We also have a national programme to support schools to understand, give them the kind of tools they need to identify and support young carers. And that programme is our National Young Carers in Schools programme that we deliver in partnership with Carers Trust and the Children's Society. And so if we were able to identify through the census The census is already in place, so it would take the inclusion of a question about pupils who were young carers, then that could help kind of increase identification of young carers through schools, where actually young carers themselves tell us is such an important place for them, because it's a place where normally they might be able to get kind of respite or be out of the home from caring or spend some time with young people their own age. But also it's a place where they can really struggle to balance their kind of homework and school life alongside their caring responsibilities. So if schools are able to kind of be aware of all of their pupils who are young carers, they're really able to implement some kind of effective means of support quite simply, really, so that young person can achieve their own potential and achieve within school and their own well-being in school as well. And so really, yes, by being able to kind of identify those young carers, then we'll be able to kind of better support schools in order to be able to provide that support to young carers themselves.
I must say, Helen, just speaking to some of the young carers and speaking to people like yourself, you must be in awe of what these young people are capable of. And I think there's, and I've got a sense of this from the carers themselves, that there's negative connotations that come with being a young carer, but at the same time, there are incredible skill sets being built up. There's incredible resilience. Yeah. And I think managed correctly, these people wouldn't just go on to have a regular future. They can have a really bright future because of their experiences that they've had from a young age that they'll be able to take with them through life.
Yeah, absolutely. I've spoken to and met many thousands of young carers over the years, and actually they always surprise me by bringing something new and just being so kind of articulate in how they talk about the care needs of their families. And the incredible resilience capability that they show across the ages of young carers as well. What we need to recognise is where there can be negative impacts upon their well-being and how we can prevent that or reduce those negative impacts. But yes, absolutely recognising a lot of those kind of skill sets that these young people bring that could be so valuable in their kind of future aspirations. As well, but many young carers tell us that it's difficult to kind of capture that and share that. And if they leave school or college, for example, with grades lower than their peers, it's not because they're not capable of achieving those grades, it's actually because their caring role is impacted upon their school and education. So they have no way of kind of showing or no kind of accreditation for the skills that they have. But I think there is we need to have a recognition actually of those kind of fundamental kind of resilience and capability skills that young carers can bring with them. A message that we consistently heard from young carers during the first lockdown was they felt that they'd been a bit forgotten by society and that they were actually kind of holding up the caring in the background. They felt like they weren't the frontline services, they were like the backline services. One of them described it as kind of keeping everything going during this time, but that people had forgotten that they were there and they weren't getting support from outside of their home. So I just think it's really important, especially as we're kind of faced into second lockdown now, about remembering that they're there and thinking about what needs they have and keeping their voice high on the agenda. So really important that you've been talking to some young carers themselves as well, I think.
No, and thank you for helping us have those conversations as well. Helen Leadbitter, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thanks.
Helen Leadbitter, National Lead for the Children's Society. Don't forget, you can get involved in this one. Hashtag Young Carers Count. That's hashtag Young Carers Count. And of course, if you're tweeting about the programme, hashtag Mental Health Monday. I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 85258. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. Shout to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.